So this fall we're having alternating formal and informal weeks. We've called the formal weeks exploring and discussion, and the informal ones painting and conversation. What? Painting? An exciting bonus this fall is watercolor lessons entitled Virtual Painting Across Continents by well-known artist Ivel Stratford Coveney, MS MFA. These workshops will take place on the informal weeks from 11 a.m. to noon when these meetings are on Zoom. So if something should happen and one meeting becomes in person, the times might change. The second hour from noon to one will be a sharing and caring meeting with the option to ask for feedback or support, which we've always discouraged in the past. Finally, from one to two, participants share their reflections on the most recent exploring and discussion meeting. The more formal weeks, the exploring and discussion meetings, will begin with an hour in which everyone has a couple of minutes to describe what's happening in their lives or their reflections on current events. One, two, or even three, we haven't tried that yet, individuals take on the task of organising the final 2 hours on a topic that is of interest to them. This presentation has no set format. It could even be an in-person gathering, like we're having in Rhode Island on the 26th of October. One thing that remains constant is that the online forums each week will go from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., whatever happens in between. However, the in-person gatherings may vary from this timing. Today, we're having a lecture preceded by three short talks to ground the topic, Exciting Discoveries About the Universe Enabled by New Tools. And as you know, I myself work part-time at the Centre for Astrophysics. Although I was not trained as an astrophysicist, I've always called myself a physicist. And one of the biggest influences in making that career choice was spending my formative years in the dry, isolated outback of Australia. Lying on the ground at night, facing the sky, the stars surround you and they feel so close that you can reach out and hold them. And furthermore, in the southern hemisphere, we're privileged to get a good view of the centre of the Milky Way and our two small companion galaxies, the Magellanic Clouds. These are hidden below the horizon when you're in the north. And the picture on this series postcard, which you can't see, is hidden very well behind the text, is of the Andromeda Nebula, our sister galaxy. I think that is one of the most beautiful things in the sky. Although this is obviously not what you see by eye. The person who instigated this topic was Barbara Sweet. And she will give the first of our three short talks. Barbara was born and brought up in Holyoke, Massachusetts. She attended nearby Mount Holyoke College, majoring in psychology. After graduation, she moved to Boston and joined the Houghton Mifflin Publishing Company. She worked there for 27 years, mainly as an editor in their social studies textbook department. Afterwards, she became a freelance editor, did volunteering, and discovered TOP, which is what became Women Explore. So, Barbara, are you ready to go?
Good morning, all, and thank you so much to our speaker for coming to enlighten us about the universe, and for Susan, who was able to bring her to us. Anyway, much of my current interest in the stars is the fact that I can't see them anymore. Living in a large city, I realized how much I have lost. the feeling of awe when I could see the night sky filled with stars, and the perspective this brings, realizing we are only specks in a vast universe. The sky was filled with stars, and I could begin to see the constellations with the help of my big brother. Then on the campus at Mount Holyoke, the stars were there when I walked back late to the dorm after studying in the library. But once I came to Boston and working at Hope Mifflin, the stars had disappeared. Only on occasional trips out of the big cities could I see what I was missing. If I went canoeing with the Appalachian Mountain Club in Upper Maine, or if I went with Alan back to his home, a small town in England, the local senior center hosted a series of illustrated talks about the universe, given by MIT grad students. It seems there was more to stars than I realized. The star that I saw at night was actually light that may have traveled millions of light years away. And who knows if that star still exists. The light from our closest star, on the other hand, the sun, has only taken about 8 minutes to reach us. As it turns out, other people are missing the stars in our cities. Currently, there is a bill pending on Beacon Hill called An Act to Improve Outdoor Lighting, Conserve Energy, and Increase Dark Sky Visibility. Our states have passed such legislation, and we hope Massachusetts does as well. In the meantime, I hope to visit the Center for Astrophysics, where Susan works at Harvard, on Thursday when it's open to the public, a clear night when I can look through their telescope and perhaps see the stars again. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. I think we should go straight on to our next focus talk. This will be Linda Valley. Linda has been enjoying stars and constellations since her mother painted Orion on Linda's bedroom ceiling with glow-in-the-dark paint. Linda has been singing to the moon for most of her life as a woman, a mother, and a crone, as well as calling to the mysteries of the galaxies for inspiration and magic. So, welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Susan. Hi, everybody. Yeah, I guess if I was going to title this little talk, I would call it Wonder. It was amazing to me as a child that somehow there were these pictures in stars in the sky and that they had stories that went with them. I mean, how is that possible? When you think about that's my introduction was stories written on the sky and Orion painted on my ceiling. And as a woman, my own spiritual journey was very much one of being in relationship with the natural world. So I was accepting and knowing that the natural world was my teacher, my guide, my comfort, my sanctuary, and that this went back way, way back to a time when there was no knowledge about what all of those things were, how the earth worked, how the stars and the planets and whatever we could see and whatever we could experience. We didn't have the knowledge way back then scientifically. It was just the experience that a woman felt in her body and her relationship with each of these elements of the natural world and what it meant to her. And sometimes the focus of that was the moon. So a woman lived in her cycles, her menstrual cycles, and the moon lived in cycles. So it became natural for a woman to identify with these cycles. And I've been part of a new moon group where we would get together every dark moon. Now, we all knew that the moon is still there. The moon isn't changing, but what we could see of her was changing. And so in the new moon, we would do divination where we'd speak of what we wanted to plant as a seed. And we would tend that seed. We would do divination and get some maybe magical information about what we were wanting to plant. And we would tend that seed until the full moon. And then we would gather together and go out and sing to the full moon. And the fullness of that energy would shine on us and speak to us and shine on our gardens in the night. And then we would sing to her and bring her energy in and help that make this seed grow. And sometimes we would notice the different stars and planets that had gathered around the moon at different particular times. So there's a lot, for me, there's a lot of magic and wonder and not knowing in a scientific way, but knowing in my own way of my body. And so I'm going to take you just on a little trip, which was one of the highlights of this wonder. My partner is Chilean. And for decades now, we've gone to Chile as often as we can. In one particular year, we go to Santiago and see family, but then we take an adventure trip. And so I want you to imagine, we were told about this place called Elqui Valley. Now, to orient you, the Atacama Desert is a little bit north of in Chile. And it's probably the driest place on the whole planet, except for the polar areas. And it's very large. Chile is so long that it goes from desert to glacier. Can't even put it on one side of a map. And so we were looking at the Atacama Desert, and on the southern fringe, there's this green place that goes all the way from the Pacific Ocean near La Serena and up through into these beautiful vineyard hills covered with the grapes that make pisco, which is a favorite alcohol in Chile. And green and beautiful, but it also had developed this reputation as being kind of mystical. And it was a place where you saw UFOs. It was very elevated. It never rained there. It was very remote. And there were rumors that aliens had come there. There were lots of quartz crystals in the ground, and people thought that that changed how the plants grew. And they said people were wearing tinfoil hats to try to bring the energy down. And so it was a lot of kind of strange and mysterious things that people talked about. But we wanted to go and see what this was all about. And we drove there from Santiago. And we rented a little tiny house. And I guess we had gotten there a little bit late in the day. And we had dinner and we were tired. And we lay down in the bed, which was next to this open window, and fell asleep. And all of a sudden, I woke up like this, like just woke up, like a bright-eyed wake-up, not a sleepy wake-up, a bright-eyed wake-up. And right through the window, there was the moon. And it was a full moon, and it was so loud. And that's the only word I can use. It was so loud, it literally woke me up in the middle of the night. And I put on my bathrobe and went outside. And the sky was filled with these amazing, I mean, to know that that's what the sky really looks like was incredible. And so I know nothing about all, because Chile is full, that desert is full of astronomical observatories. It's very known for that. I don't know anything about the science of any of this. But my body and my heart and my soul and my eyes are filled with the wonder, of it. So Elqui Valley was just an amazing, amazing experience. And in 2015, after we had gone there, it was named as the world's first dark sky sanctuary. So there are some dark sky sanctuaries. There's one in Michigan, I think. Up maybe the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. There's, I think, three in the United States, but it was named as one of the first dark sky sanctuaries. So I felt so grateful to have been there. And I'm just going to end with a little chant that we sing that goes like this. There is a secret one inside. All the stars and all the galaxies run through her hands like beads. There is a secret one inside. All the stars and all the galaxies run through her hands like beads. So, thank you.
Thank you, Linza. I think you're very lucky to have seen the sky in Chile. I think I've never done that, but...
Elqui Valley awaits you.
Yes. The final short talk is by Mary Rose Nuti. She is a retired nurse, a wife, a mother, and a grandmother of seven. She's very curious and loves learning new things. One of her grandsons is very excited about learning about the cosmos. He already knows a lot more than she does, so she's piqued her curiosity about the night sky, and she'll share more about that in her talk. Thank you, Mary Rose.
Thanks, Susan. Yes, my talk is very short, but I don't remember as a child being so curious about the sky, and I lived in the country, so we certainly had better visions without so much light around us, but I just don't recall. I remember so much more about nature, but not the sky so much. But as an adult, I've been more, more aware of everything. And I remember going to Bar Harbor in Maine and seeing the sky without all the ambient light. And it was just so beautiful and so different from living in the Boston area. Another place that also in Maine, Booth Bay, we were in a rented house with friends, and it was the first time I'd ever heard of the app, the night sky. And we went out on a little balcony, and it was a very good view. There weren't trees in the way, and it was just amazing to stand there and look at everything and then use this app that would magnify it all. It was really gorgeous, and I'd never heard of that at all. And then the blue moon, which just happened recently, there was so much talk about it on the weathermen were talking about it, and that there were two in the same month and all that. And so my husband and I drove to very close by. There's a parking lot at Jordan's Furniture, but it's up high. So a lot of other cars were there too to observe the moon coming up. And the store very kindly, I don't know if anybody asked them, but they shut off the outdoor lights. So you had a much better view of the moon rising, and there were a lot of clouds in the sky that night. So you could see the moon behind the clouds, but then you knew it was going to get higher up in the sky, and it was very visible and just beautiful. And we just stood there for like 45 minutes watching, and it was very exciting to see. And again, my grandson, he's 13, and he is just so fascinated with all of science, really. He's trying to teach himself physics, and I think he's actually managing to do that. But he just knows so much, and he knows all the names, and he has a telescope too, which I don't think I've ever looked through myself. I should get myself over there one night and just look with him. But it's just wonderful to see the curiosity in children, but especially him. He's just so curious about everything, and loves to read about Stephen Hawking and all these famous people that we know about. Neil deGrasse Tyson, he has his book too, and he can sit there and talk to you forever. For such a young person, it's exciting for me to listen to him. And so I'm looking forward to your talk, and wish that Susan said the book really isn't available to the public, but maybe we can.
It is available, but it's very expensive.
Right. That's what you said. Okay. Well, greetings to our speaker, and it's so nice to have you here. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary Rose. And I recommend that you do go over and have a look through your grandson's telescope.
Right.
I've been working on the moons of Jupiter. And if you look through a telescope, you'll be able to see those four moons circling around Jupiter. And you only have to wait a couple of hours and they'll be in different places.